This is the Deus Vault Podcast.
Batman's back.
Yeah.
No, it's more of a Jocko thing. He does a podcast. He's a Navy SEAL, ex-Navy SEAL. He does a very masculine podcast. Some of the priests in this diocese listen to him.
Well, that's cool. But on the order of masculinity, I understand why you listen to him, but on the order of like Army versus Navy, how can you tolerate that?
Oh, well, he was never really on a boat. You have to remember that. He did all kinds of other stuff on the ground.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair.
Yeah. That's SEALs, fair. Man. They're an interesting. SEALs are, I think, majority Catholic. It's one of those interesting things where
really?
Like, oh yeah. Huh. No, and if you know anything about SEALs training, you know it's like for only the most hardcore of the hardcore.
Maybe it's because Catholics are good at suffering.
There's all kinds of things in that redemptive suffering.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's kind of the voice I was going for. He oftentimes does reflections like this and talks about the soldiers in the foxholes and then things like that, and it's really good.
Now I'm getting a hint of how you preach to the good people.
I don't actually. I don't think my voice ever drops an octave when I'm preaching.
Just try it sometime. Just see if you have people's attention.
So there I was,
and there it goes again. No, I think I just talk to him as normal. And I mean, like I said, you don't see the hand movements I'm constantly doing, so you're losing a lot of context. Hmm. But any good Italian out there would know what I'm talking about.
Of course.
Hoo-wah.
Yeah. During the shutdown, Father Dennis DiBenedetto, shout out to Father Dennis, and I were living in the rectory at St. Robert's in North Manchester together, and we came down for Holy Week to spend those days. Father Stephen Felicia was living with Father David Violi at the time.
I was.
St. Joe's in Bluffton.
Hoo-wah.
But anyway, I claim, so Father David Violi, Father Stephen Felicia, Father Dennis DiBenedetto, I'm the only German. I claim that I was the true ultramontanist in that moment.
It's funny if you know what ultramontanism is, which is basically the fact that the Germans keep crossing over the Alps to come invade Italy, historically speaking.
Yeah, one way or another, either to vacation or to impose their rule.
Mm-hmm. Or to discuss things in a very lively fashion.
Yeah, well, that's one way to put it. Yeah.
But it has ecclesiastical connotations, if you want to explain those.
Well, right. Also, the ultramontane person would be someone who is, well, it might even be considered to the point of vice almost, like overly attentive nature of listening to the Pope, whoever the Pope is, without ever like sort of considering the full understanding of ecclesial life, you know, so it's, yeah.
Our three tools are fear, surprise, and a fanatical devotion to the Pope.
Anyways.
What?
Well, you don't know that reference?
No, I don't know that.
It's Monty Python.
That's
Flying Circus.
That's appropriate.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh, okay, sure.
Our three tools are fear.
I think it changes every time. Anyways, as they go through the sketch. Yeah.
Spam and eggs.
Spam. Oh, so you are familiar.
I know some of it. I didn't recognize that one.
And it goes on.
Yeah, like.
But now like, for something completely different.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. It's
the name of this podcast.
Well, yeah, pretty much. It's kind of just thought to thought. That's fine.
From ultramontanism to Monty Pythonism.
Yeah.
Ultramonte Pythonism. Anyways,
sure.
It doesn't work as well.
Ultra montane. The word breakdown is, of course, ultra, meaning like going over, and montane referring to the mountains.
Ultra.
So like a literal geographical reference to people who live in the rest of Europe crossing over the Alps to go into the Italic Peninsula.
You know, so. I heard the bear went over the mountain once. Nothing, nowhere to go with that.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's a good song.
Good.
Hang on a sec.
Good.
Good.
How
are you? We're fine here. How are you?
Yeah. Boring conversation.
Anyways.
Star Wars reference for those of you who are paying attention.
I'm sure that we're all doing that.
It's great. So I was just going to say we should probably just go ahead and maybe try to get right into it. So last episode, actually, for us in real time, that dropped last night. So hopefully it's being listened to, and hopefully people are enjoying that. But but in the last episode, we kind of got in a little bit into my vocation story, you know, how I got to be where I am right now.
Ooh,
as far as seminary and formation goes.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I think it's just fair to go to the other side of these things here and see what it was like in the life of Stephen Felicia.
Oh, the life of Stephen Felicia has many different stories. You can pick your own. They're multiple choice.
90% of them are
90% of it is not true, but it's entertaining. So maybe that's why you listen, right? Right?
Sure. Yeah.
As the numbers plummet. Yeah. But the
witness me.
Witness. Oh, wow. This is still a very cinematic podcast. Holy smokes.
I get that way when I'm with you. I don't really make those kind of references when I'm by myself.
So this is my fault is what you're saying.
Basically. That's fine.
Well, who talks to themselves in like movie reference besides myself?
Well, that's true. But I mean like when I'm with people who aren't you.
Oh, yeah. Are there people like that?
I know one of your maxims is soon everyone will
be
me.
Yeah, no, it is. Anyways.
Anyway, well, let's find out what we're all going to be someday.
Yeah, then. Yeah, you want to be this.
Tell us.
Tell us. No, the so there I was playing with my Ninja Turtles in the third grade. And this is a true story. And I think it was indoor recess at St. Therese, which is fitting that I start the story making reference to St. Therese because this is happy October 1st. Happy Feast Day, man.
Happy Feast Day.
It's the Feast of St. Therese. And so there I am playing with my Ninja Turtles, and I think I had Donatello and Raphael in my hands, and I just suddenly knew. It was like someone tapped me in the brain, and I didn't hear a voice or anything. I didn't see anything. I just suddenly was like, oh, I'm supposed to be a priest. It was literally just like, huh, okay, which I come to think about later on in life. I must just be so dense. God was like, I can't let you screw this up. Here, look, this is, you're supposed to do this.
Just battering ram you
right before. Right, and you know, and nothing special. Obviously, you're not special. I'm just telling you this because you're a moron.
you're not gonna pick it up unless I tell you.
Yeah. So anyways, don't misread what I'm telling you, God said. And that's how it felt. And I literally went back to playing with my toys because what was I supposed to do? I was in third grade. And I do remember, like, as that, and I had mentioned in second grade, one of my buddies, who I'm still friends with, amazingly, from kindergarten, I've had this friend. I've had a couple of friends since kindergarten. And he says that in second grade, I was even talking about being a priest. But I also remember talking about like being, you know, the garbage man or an astronaut in second grade. So I wouldn't take that too seriously. So I was just saying stuff, you know, kids say crazy things. Adults say crazy things. You're listening to this podcast.
You can still be an astronaut. You could be the first bishop of the Diocese of the Moon.
No, that's already taken in Florida.
Oh, okay. We'll go for Mars then.
I think it all falls under NASA. Where's Cape?
Oh, so it's Canaveral. Is it military archdiocese then?
No. It's NASA's a civilian organization, brother. It's a diocese down in Florida claims the moon is part of their as part of the diocese of I can't remember which one it is, whatever Cape Canaveral's in or something. Anyways.
Okay.
So yeah, you learned something new. Glad I could help.
Okay.
I don't know if Rome has approved that or not, but
probably not.
It seems logical. That's logical.
Sure.
We can talk about colonialism some other time, but when like Spain showed up, I wonder how the diocese setup worked up that way.
Right. Interplanetary colonialism.
Well, yeah. So how else would you do it? It worked before.
Apparently that's going to be coming very soon, by the way.
Coming very soon. The moon base.
According to Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah. We are the masters of the moon. Anyways,
Mars,
I digress.
But anyway, go ahead.
Whatever. We got to go. Are we telling my story or not?
Well, whatever. This is...
Because I can sit here and rant about space exploration all day.
I believe you. Continue. Yes.
He's a wise man. I was struck with the idea of being a priest in third grade. And I remember thinking about that as the weeks and months went on. And even into fourth and fifth grade, I was pretty sure that's what God wanted me to do. And so it was just like something that, oh, okay, that's something I'll do. But unfortunately, I never really saw, any attraction to the priesthood. So I just didn't feel like it was, oh, I'm supposed to do this. Great. And I mean, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I suppose, I mean, this is just off the cuff here, so everybody brace. But like, I imagine like, it's like a story, you know, like the prince when he's a kid is told he's going to marry the princess. And he's like, girls, ooh, you know, kind of thing. I suppose that's kind of what it was for me. Was I didn't say, ooh, the priesthood. It was just like, oh, okay. What do I care at the age of 10. Right. And like I said, I just didn't see any draw to it. So
at 10, you haven't grown into it yet.
Well, I mean, no, you haven't grown into anything yet.
Right.
Again, I'm growing out of my clothes. But the...
yeah, exactly.
That was always fun. The but so in eighth grade, I realize that that seems crazy, or at least I decide that's crazy. Who knows exactly, you know, what they're supposed to be just because. And I looked to put it off and I said, you know, maybe I was service oriented and I was a Boy Scout. I later on became an Eagle Scout and I like service projects and that sort of thing. And I like order and structure. And so you think, you know, oh, that's a good lineup for the priesthood. Again, didn't really see the hierarchical structure at the time. It was the '90s going into the early 2000s. And so I said, maybe I'll be a police officer. My parents had been police back in their youths. And said, maybe I'll be in the army in case I don't want to do that. Or said, maybe I'll be, maybe I'll do something else like that. And I said, maybe I'll do this priesthood thing, you know, like in my 60s or something like that. Because I knew you could do this, something like that. And high school rolled around. I went to Bishop Lewis. Great, great school. Lewis Spirit. We used to beat Dwenger in football all the time, which was awesome. And, oh, it's true. It was a thing.
Whatever, man.
Yeah, I know.
Before my time.
So before your time. It's amazing the difference 8 years makes.
Yeah.
Oh, that works on so many levels. Anyways, and high school rolls around. I'm a sophomore at this Catholic high school, and September 11th happens. And again, I was angry, and I took the attack personally. I'd been raised to appreciate patriotism, to appreciate my country, to love my country. And so a couple of weeks went by, and I went home to Dad one day, and I said to him, Dad, what do you think about me joining the Army right out of high school? And I remember he was working at home. He swiveled around in his chair, and he said, you would make a better officer than you would enlisted. And I think that's just about as much as he said. And so I said, okay. And I thought about that, and I knew something about the military. I had a great, great high school teacher, a man by the name of Mr. Maine, John Maine. And he knew his history backwards and forwards, and he made it entertaining. He also had his eyes were different colors. So he was like the wolf. Like, he just, I mean, like, it's just, like, crazy eyes. I mean, one was like blue and one was brown. It was strange. We never looked this man in the eyes.
Oh, that's cool.
And so anyways, so I knew about this wonderful magical land called West Point. Speaking of fairy tales, and again, because we had studied the Civil War, and he had pointed out that something like 95% of the generals in the Civil War were West Pointers. And I was just fascinated by this idea of a military academy. And again, there's, you know, what's the draw of, like, say, Hogwarts or something like that? Academies make their appearances, schools for the gifted, you know, Xavier's School for Gifted Children. In all these recent incarnations of, like, the structured academy, you know, like Plato's Academy, although that one doesn't have anywhere near the pop culture poll that these other ones do, although that one was actually real. But that being said, so I saw this place that was like this crucible event, and I had decent grades, and I was a decent athlete. I could have been better, and I was getting better, and I joined the track team to get better, and I was on the rifle team, and I said to myself, I bet you I could do this, and I wanted to test myself. And I wanted to be a part of the war. Again, a rite of passage, you know. There was a line in the movie Patton, holy smokes, cinematography. Mm-hmm. But we're not changing the name of the podcast, but wow. But there's a line where Patton has been relieved of command, and he explodes. The guy had an explosive temper, and George C. Scott was the actor playing Patton. And he says, you know, the greatest war in the history of mankind, and I am left out of it? God will not permit this. And then he, you know, storms out of the room.
Oh my, oh my gosh.
And so I didn't have one of those moments, but there was that sort of like, again, like, there's a war. Like, what do you do? And I don't know how any other youth. Well, a lot of people signed up, but it wasn't like everybody and their mother. And but yeah, there was just that. How can I not go? And plus, I wanted to see if I could make it into the academy. So I got, I applied to the academy. This is all circling back to the priesthood, I promise. The So I applied. And I did all this paperwork and stuff. I did zero preparation for the priesthood, zero. But it simply doesn't go away, this desire to be a priest. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, I don't know. I think I had turned in all my paperwork. And I don't know if I'd been accepted yet or not. I don't think I had been. And, but again, I was so torn this one evening. I'm sitting at the kitchen table and my mom walked in. Torn because I feel this call to the priesthood. And she, my mom walked in and I said to her, I said, Mom, and I'd done zero prep for the seminary. I said, Mom, what do you think about me dropping all of this work for the academy and looking into going into seminary? And this is senior year. There's no time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's ludicrous what I'm saying. And she said to me, she said, it's easier to go from being a soldier to a priest than being a priest and becoming a soldier. And I said, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks, Mom. Mm-hmm. So here's the interesting sidebar on that. It doesn't have anything to do with movies. Mom started praying to St. Maximilian Kolbe, who I had something of a slight devotion to at the time because part of my Eagle Scout project had involved a parish named St. Maximilian Kolbe. And Mom knew his story that when he was a kid, he wanted to be a soldier. And he had been drawing in his books. He didn't. You can look at his old notebooks. I think they're online. And he was like doodling in the margins like airplanes and tanks and artillery and stuff. He's a straight kid. He's great. And he decided at the end of high school or whatever they called it at the time in Poland that he would go and join the army. He was going to run away. And his mom got wind of that. And she showed up at school and she said, what are you doing? And he said, well, I'm going to go join the army, Mom. And she said, no. She said, you're going to go be a priest. And she had such clout with him that he said, okay. And voila, we have St. Maximilian Kolbe several years down the road. But so Mom started praying. It was sort of a reverse Kolbe moment. So his mother sent him off to the priesthood. My mom sent me off to to the army. But she started praying to St. Maximilian Kolbe for me and for my vocation, which I owed the saint a massive debt. So anyways, I go to the academy and I decide not to date. And this is funny. I realized this is the funniest part, was like when I realized what this choice was like 5 years down the road. But I said to myself, I said, look, again, like I said, still no real attraction to the priesthood. I said, look, if God wants me to be a priest, then that'll come about. But I said, and if he wants me to get married, that'll come about. So here's the deal. Like, I won't go looking for a wife. So I'm not throwing up any roadblocks to your plan. But I'm giving God, like secretly, I was giving God enough time to change his mind. And I figured, well, I'll run into somebody. Man, West Point is 12% women. You won't find a girl unless you're really looking. And
sounds like engineering school at Purdue University.
It's engineering school on drugs. It's insane. And so I didn't realize that till Alaska. And I was like, wow, it's been like 5 years and like nothing's happened. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. I haven't been around women ever. Like, I'm in Alaska. Everybody's inside.
Yeah.
Anyways, so that's the deal. And the guys would ask me, they said, why don't you date anyone? Well, I said, well, I think I'm supposed to be a priest. And my brother cadets would look at me and I would look back at them and be like, you want to go get a drink? And they said, yeah, sure. And I'd go off. And that was the end of that conversation. So anyways, I spent my time at the academy. Not an easy time, but I learned a lot. It teaches you humility. Boxing will teach you humility. There are a lot of virtues that if you don't pick them up, you're probably either a monster or not going to stay at the academy very long. So both of those are possible.
Yeah. I remember at one point in seminary you telling me a man learns a lot about himself when he gets punched in the face.
Oh, it's so true. Oh, Dan, I wish every man could have the joy of being punched in the face at least once in their life. I don't think he's lived. Maybe if you broke a bone or something, you've got, I don't know. Like, there's something about Someone physically, someone else physically punching you. And like, it's not like, oh, I fell. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, I better do something.
Yeah. It's, I think at the time you were using that anecdote to like help me through some sort of difficult situation that I was going through.
Oh, wild.
Because like, you know, that preaches, as we say.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good metaphor.
For
a lot of life things. I have never been punched in the face.
You've never been?
I've been hit by baseballs.
It's not the same thing at all. Oh, I mean,
I've had my share of black eyes.
Well, I'm not saying there's not pain involved, but
sure.
The face is a very sensitive area. That's why you swing at it. Man,
good to know.
Yeah, anyways, but you learn three things. One, you learn you don't like it. Two, it's going to keep happening unless you do something about it.
Right.
And three, you better move your feet. So, like, the spiritual applications there, pray. Without ceasing, there is someone who is meaning to do you harm, and if he does it to you, it will be bad.
Yeah,
and you have means of defense, but you have to sort of find it within yourself. Anyways, that was a required class. So I'm at the academy. I go through that. The call to the priesthood never goes away, and I'm never honestly tempted away from it by anything. It's bizarre. Maybe it's not bizarre. Maybe, again, it was a gift. Because Lord knows I'm a fool. Anyone who's listened to this podcast for at least half an hour has that clue. How is this man successful? God protects fools, drunks in the United States of America. And Stephen Felicia, apparently.
Apparently.
But so, I graduate.
Good.
You're all sitting there wondering, how did he do that?
Yeah.
That will be a story for another time, children.
Oh,
we're never coming back to that. It's like Luke's lightsaber in whatever that movie was that pretended to be Star Wars. Anyways, so I graduate, and they assign me to the field artillery because I'm not good with math,
and the
Army is stellar at making selections like that.
Yeah, they figure he's got an explosive personality.
Easy, Dad. Jeez. But it's true. But it's my vocation director, Monsignor Gaelic. He said he was reviewing my transcripts. He's like, I passed math. He's like, you got C's in math. He says, they made you an artilleryman? And I looked at him. I said, it's more art than science. It is. Yeah. Does that look like a mile to you? Yeah, it's a mile. Pull the trigger. Oh, no, add 500 meters. Okay, there it is. Anyways, so true story. So I became an artilleryman. So I do have an explosive personality. And so I studied over at SIL. And from Fort Sill, I went up to Alaska. January 2009, I was in Alaska. It was negative 56 degrees. It was brutal cold. And then in February of 2009, I was in Afghanistan. It was just like that. Quick turnaround. I graduated in May 2008, whatever it's worth. And
talk about a night and day difference.
Oh, yeah. It was ridiculous, man. Like, and
completely different kind of barren wasteland.
Oh, well, it's actually the part I was in. Afghanistan has a very varying topography and geography, and what's the other thing? Not meteorology, but the weather's varies.
Oh, okay.
And
different climates.
There's different climates and different terrain.
Sure.
And it's really, the part I was in was beautiful. They grew a lot of wheat. And it was like one of the few places in the country where like you can grow something other than poppies. And they did. And thank God for it. Just beautiful. And it was a crossing point for Taliban and Haqqani. And so our job was, I was assigned to a unit as a fire support officer. And again, the priesthood makes a lot of sense when you realize as an artilleryman, you really learn how to pray. Please God, let this land where it's supposed to. And I was assigned as a fire support officer. So I was in charge of the forward observers. And our job was to call in artillery on targets. And also we would coordinate the air. So we would coordinate with helicopters and fixed wing aircraft when it would come on station. And so it was a kinetic area. We got in country and it was just a straight fight almost from day one. We were on these little outposts called combat outposts, COPs, we would call them. And there would be a larger base behind us called a FOB, a forward operating base. And that could be, it would be like the size of a little town, a forward operating base. And your COP wasn't very big. It was like a neighborhood at best, like a block. And you're set up and surrounded by these things called HESCO walls, which are filled with dirt, and you had latrines. We were in such a violent area, we couldn't get in a port-a-john guy. Some areas were calm enough where they could have they'd hire Afghan companies to come in and clean the port-a-johns. We couldn't have that. We had to burn our human waste on the outpost. Oh, yeah. You'd cover your stuff in lime and stuff, and you'd wait a day, and then the poor soldier would drag it out. And they'd wear masks. Oh, they were pre-COVID wearing masks. And you'd burn the stuff. You'd mix it with petroleum. You set it on fire. It was a weird way to live. You got used to it. And every week, well, every other week is fair, they would attack us, or we would spot them and engage them. And we would do patrols and stuff, find all kinds of bombs in the road, sometimes worse ways. It was just the third week I was there, my commander got shot. I mean, like, that's how crazy a place this was. Sabari is what it's called. And Cop Sabari is the name of the nearest village. It was like a province kind of thing. Anyways, inside a coast province was this area called Sabari. And so, like, that's the level of violence we're dealing with. And we never lost anybody. It was incredible. We had a lot of injuries, some bad ones. We never lost anyone. And so you get scared. And, like, I was pretty scared. Like, night my commander got shot. Something exploded behind me. A mortar round exploded 18 feet behind me. And I just, after that, you're kind of good with a lot of stuff, with, like, combat, but I just froze. And the 6 months of this go on. And I wake up one day because it's quiet. Because normally in the background, you got something like, you got the generators all running. And it was quiet. Someone hadn't refilled the generator. So I imagine one sergeant was beating the snot out of a PFC to get the thing refilled. It came back on shortly thereafter. We were in no immediate danger, apparently.
Right.
But I sat up in my cot, and I'm inside this little plywood box, no bigger than what we're doing this podcast. And honestly, that's like my room. And, you know, you sleep with, like, all these guns and grenades and stuff all around you. And you got your, if you're an officer, you had your computer. Well, I'm sure all the soldiers have their laptops and stuff, but I had my computer next to me. And I sat up, put my feet on the ground, and it occurred, like, just as, like, God had pointed out to me, you're supposed to be a priest. Like, same sledgehammer-like moment into my mind was, I couldn't be killed. Like, I'd been scared. But the thought, like, the actual realization that I could be killed, never registered really until this moment. I'm like 24. And so I was, and this thought followed quickly on its heels, which was, you'll never say a mass if you're dead. Mm. And I was very much shocked by that, because I knew that God might be calling me to the priesthood, but he hadn't promised me that I would live through Afghanistan. Like, I had no guarantee of that. Mm-hmm. Like, that was me putting off something that I knew I should be doing, and this is me doing what I want, and in a particularly dangerous environment. And I was like, oh, wow. And so I did what any rational person does when they're facing death. They pray, and which is really why people should be taught to pray more. There's that line, movie reference again.
Here we go.
Sandra Bullock in the movie Gravity, where she's playing an astronaut and their shuttle's been destroyed, and they're trying to maneuver through the Earth's atmosphere to get to a space station so they can get to an escape pod to get back to Earth. You know, super scary. There's a point where she's completely out of control and George Clooney is coming to save her or something like that. But she's drifting off into space. She's done. If no one comes and gets her, she is quite honestly done. And that's a terrible way to die, out in space by yourself. That's crazy.
Right.
And she says, and she's talking to herself, trying to calm herself down. She says, I'd pray, but no one ever taught me how. Hmm. And so, like, there's just something so, so honest about that in that secular film. Well, I can't say it's per se secular. It just doesn't have any real religious themes. But there it is there's this beautiful human moment. Anyways, so I said a very honest prayer. And you know, you think of Peter when he falls into the water. Lord, save me.
Right,
smartest thing he could have done at that time.
Right, exactly.
Don't let anyone tell you different. Well, I can handle this on my own. No, no, no. Straight up. He's like, help. Anyways, so I said a very honest prayer. And I said, and I was negotiating. I thought I had a good position. I said, Lord, I can't be a priest if I'm dead. I said, and I said, look. If you keep me alive, I said, I owe the Army 5 years because anything free is seldom cheap. West Point is a free education if you don't mind giving the Army 5 years of your life. And when you're 18, it seems like a pretty good deal. And I said, Lord, I'm no good to you dead if you want me to be a priest. So you have to get me out of here in one piece. If you do that, as soon as my time in the Army's up, because I owe them what I owe them, I will look into the priesthood. But you have to keep me alive. And with all my canonical digits, too. So I did. Honestly, that was one of the scariest things when I was in the Army. It's a strange thing. Like, you get these weird fears in life. And I suppose it's true of everyone. But in the Army, like, my one fear wasn't, like, specifically, like, oh, death or something like that. Or a particular way to die. I was so scared I'd lose my fingers.
Really?
Like, oh, yeah. Not even like my whole hand, but like if I just lost my fingers. Like most people would count themselves lucky, depending on the situation.
Yeah.
I couldn't fathom what I was going to do.
Well, you do so much. I mean, so much of fighting is with your hands.
And even
indirect things. You're working with heavy machinery. You're working with big guns.
Explosives. I broke my finger learning how to jump out of airplanes. I was a paratrooper. And like that unnerved me. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that I couldn't use this one finger. What if I couldn't use it? And honestly, Dan, it was about the mass. It was about whether or not I can hold the paten and the chalice. And so that was always in the back of my mind. Anyways, war goes on and I get out of it amazingly, more or less in one piece. And I come home and the way God arranges things, and I love this. If you look at your life, you will see patterns in your life. You just will. And don't make more of them than, you know, I am the chosen one. But don't, but they're there. God, you know, you're like, why did this happen on the Feast of Saint Therese? Or X, Y, and Z. And I'll tell you more about that when I get to the end of this crazy, convoluted story. And I came home, and the way God arranged it was all my friends were transferred out of the unit. No one did anything bad. Yeah, it was just the way it was. People left the Army. People got moved to another unit, whatever. And so suddenly, I had no friends when I showed up in Alaska. And now, after the deployment, I have no friends again. And it gives you time to think. And what it gave me time to think about, again, it was a year-long deployment. So I'm back February 2010 in Alaska. And it's cold and dark, and I'm alone. And in Alaska, and like suddenly, like you contemplate your life, and like not just like, oh, I'm gonna die, but like, what have I been doing with it? And I was like, oh, I'm kind of a mess. Because in Afghanistan at the time, there were only 12 Catholic priests, 12 Catholic chaplains in 2009 in Afghanistan. I saw a priest, I think, four times the entire time I was deployed. And I think I went to communion that many times, and I can't even be sure. I went to confession once. I think I did. And I realized that simply didn't cut it. Like, how badly did I need the sacraments? I needed them badly. And so I went one night to the post. We had a Catholic chaplain. It was Fort Richardson, Alaska. And I went to the Catholic chaplain, and I gave him a 20-minute confession. And after that, I was a million times better.
That's how it works, man.
It is how it works. It's an incredible gift, the sacrament. And again, I wasn't perfect. I wasn't fixed, per se. But I mean, again, if I got hit by a bus, I have every hope that I would be saved. But I was like, I need to take this way more seriously. And it wasn't that, again, as I sometimes jokingly say, I was the best bad Catholic you ever met. I did go to church every Sunday. And I did go to confession twice a year, whether I needed to or not. But
I have something to tell you. You probably did.
I probably needed it. Yeah. But but sometimes even more. I mean,
right.
But suddenly, I was very much realizing like how dependent upon grace I was, because I'd been without regular doses of it for so long in an incredibly bad environment.
Right.
And war is not good for any living thing, brothers and sisters. You probably didn't need me to tell you that, but I'm telling you that.
Right.
So
that's one of those things. Sorry, a little bit of a sidebar here. This is something that we should definitely put out there. Hmm. Like Catholics, we need to do a lot more praying for our troops, because one of the realities is that I think I don't remember exactly
it is,
but
it's the internet. We'll just spitball it.
Well, no, but it's but the problem of you know, having chaplains right now.
It's super low.
The
Army needs 300 chaplains. They have 100.
Yeah.
The Navy, Catholic chaplains.
Right, priests.
To tend to the number of Catholics we have in the Army.
Right.
The Air Force needs about the same number. I think they have 70.
Right.
And then I think Navy's down to 50 chaplains, or at least a year or two ago, that's how it was. So it's bad out there, folks. You please pray for – we need priests everywhere. Let's not kid ourselves. But just pray that God supplies what is needed. And anyway, so I come back, and I'm growing in my faith, you can say. And I'm practicing my faith more regularly. That's a better way to put it. And I am doing some reading. I picked up this book by Thomas Aquinas. I was like, well, if I end up in seminary, I know I need to know something about this guy.
That's true.
And it was like his selected writings. It was like a Penguin book.
Oh, sure.
And I literally know very little about Thomas Aquinas. I just bought it. And it was at Barnes & Noble. They used to have such a good religious section. From time to time, they still have. Like, it's weird. Like, you stumble in, and every once in a while, you'll find, like, these beautiful gems. And then other times, you're like, you know, how to summon demons. Oh, this is good in the religion section. Yeah, and wait, you want demons? Because that's how you get demons.
Yeah.
But anyway, don't do that. But first day of October, let that be your warning, people. Stay away from demons. They are not your friends. We can do a podcast on that some other time.
Well, actually, yeah. I'm thinking we're going to have to do one on All Hallowtide.
Oh, hoo-ah. That'd be stellar. Next
time. Yeah. So
coming up next. So I digress. So I pulled the book on Thomas Aquinas, and I opened it up. I just opened it to a random page. Big mistake. It's part of it was a selected portion of the Summa.
Oh, jeez.
And it said –
one does not simply open to a single page of the Summa. Not.
There it is. Yeah. And thanks, Boromir. And I open, and it seems that, and then it went off on some like theological point.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I can get this. And I literally spent like maybe it was as much as 40 minutes. I spent a long time figuring out what this one portion was saying. It seems that. I was like, okay, I understand that. I get this theological point. And I turn the page, and it says, you know, on the contrary, the exact opposite is true. You're like, Thomas!
Right. For those of you who don't know, the Summa Theologiae is set up with a bunch of arguments and then Thomas's response to those things.
Right.
So they could be even arguments from certain other theologians who aren't necessarily unorthodox or heterodox.
Mm-hmm.
They're just different from what Thomas would say about it. It's just a different theological opinion. But if you're not acquainted with Thomas Aquinas and the Summa, you'll get into it and you'll read the first thing and be like, oh, that's what Thomas thinks.
It's not at all what Thomas thinks.
Right. You read the rest of the article and you're like, he thinks completely differently about this. You know?
Yeah, I put it down. I never picked it back up.
until like third theology.
Until like,
what is it?
5 years after that fact?
Yeah. Whenever we had Summa together. Yeah.
Anyway, so the... that was a thing that happened to me in Alaska, reading Thomas. I was insulted by St. Thomas Aquinas. There I was. And anyway, so I go on a second deployment. I come back, still in one piece, and I start getting out of the Army. I'm a captain by this point, and I have 8 months left in, but they don't want to put me on staff, because by the time they teach you a staff position, I'm leaving. They know this. So they make up a staff position for me. This position does not normally exist in the Army, and I can do this job in the first half of my day, and I can take a long lunch, and I can come back and do some more work. But if nobody's watching me, I could be out the door by 3 or 4. And that's enjoyable for 2 weeks, except I return to I have no friends who can play this game with me. So I start going, amazingly, to Mass, to daily Mass. And I started doing, I wouldn't call it a full holy hour, but I started to do holy hours. And yeah, there's a cool story there, but I've already gone off on too many tangents. Let me just get to the point. Anyways, the priest, the chaplain, Catholic chaplain, comes up to me, says, why do I see you here so often? Oh, I say, well, I'm getting out of the Army. They gave me this made-up job, so in my spare time, I come here. He says, what are you going to do when you get out of the Army? I said, I kind of want your job. He said, okay. He put me in touch with the vocation director, a man by the name of Monsignor Gaelic at the time, real good man. Still, I would even consider this man a personal friend at this point in my life. And I got a hold of him and took two tries because you're a four-hour time difference. And he said, oh, I don't know you from Adam. You sound okay. He says, but can you stay out of trouble for a year?
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Yeah, no, just, oh, that's how I sound. Yeah. Anyways, I didn't come in like this. Hello. Hello, Monsignor. But the... where are they? The... anyways, the... I said, yeah, I can stay out of trouble. And I was getting out in July, and school started in August, so there's no way they could have gotten me in, even if he had known me. And I come home, and Fort Wayne, Indiana, is my home, and I love it here. And it was like the wheels were greased. I traveled a lot. I started learning how to seriously pray the breviary. That's another thing. I say there was no attraction to the priesthood. There was a priest who taught me to pray the breviary in high school. And even during my time in the Army, I would pick up the breviary. And it was only the introit. I would only pray the introit. And occasionally I might pray something else of it. Or I'd do some of the readings. Mm-hmm. I thought it was the coolest, like I said, best bad Catholic. I was so surprised that the saints had written stuff. I was like, oh, you have the writings of the saints? That's cool. And so like here I had all these books full, because I was given the breviary is set as a gift when I graduated high school.
Oh, nice.
So they would stay in my footlocker at West Point and in the Army, and I would pull them out occasionally. And Faustina was there too, St. Faustina. It's amazing how the saints follow you around. Mm-hmm. So to get into West Point, they had to take my tonsils out. And so I'm lying there in agony. It was around Christmas time. So I gave up my Christmas break. I think it was my senior year. And in order to – and my mom gave me a copy of St. Faustina's diary, The Divine Mercy, in my soul. And I remember that was the first time I really began to understand, like, mortification and, like, the meaning of offering it up in union with, like, pain and suffering. And every once in a while in the Army, again, it wasn't like anything even like a monthly thing, but, like, every few months I would open up my footlocker and pull out St. Faustina's book, and I would read it for 5, 10, 15 minutes and put it away. So it's amazing how like just little things and little saints follow you around. Well, anyways, I get accepted to seminary and I do 6 years. I meet Dan Cale. I have a great time. And June 6th, I was ordained to the priesthood of Jesus Christ. And I thank God for my Army experience because I see just how much it's prepared me for the priesthood. And it's more than just wearing a uniform and getting up early. It's like emotional control. It's like structured living. It's like knowing what to do under pressure. It's like knowing how to do your job when you're experiencing emotional highs and lows and how to talk to people who are in crisis. And then there's all these other tools too to use to boot, the sacraments, the graces, different prayers. It's kind of like understanding your weapon systems. What's appropriate for this range? What's appropriate given this scenario, given the people that are involved? Diplomacy. It all circles back. I take from this treasure trove, and I'm very blessed to have access to it. But the coolest thing, I say you look for patterns in your life. June 6th was the day I was ordained. June 6th was also D-Day. But in my own life, the night of the biggest attack, the night where like they tried to overrun my outpost, was June 6th. And I thought that was the craziest thing. Well, it was technically the early morning of June 6th. We call it the night of June 5th, but it technically started at like 2 a.m. June 6th. And you were just like, that's the day God helped keep me alive. And so did St. Barbara. Thank God for St. Barbara. Crusading elements follow my life around too. I was raised on a street called Knightswood Drive. I attended Bishop Lewis High School. Their mascot is the Black Knights, the Knights.
Yeah.
St. Therese, my grade school, our mascot was the Crusaders. I go to West Point. The football team is the Black Knights, as is our mascot. The unit I was assigned to inside of West Point was the C-1 Crusaders. I enter the field artillery. The field artillery has weapon systems named Paladins, Crusaders, Priests, Knights. I mean, and it just... You're like, wow. So like Dan, here I am just ranting at this point. But like spiritual warfare and like mm-hmm. you look for patterns, you'll see what God wants from your life. Therese looked at her life and she wanted to be a soldier and she wanted to be a martyr and she wanted to be a missionary. Right. She had this real, you know, fascination with like being hardcore. Mm-hmm. And the Carmelite, the Carmel mm-hmm. is a super hardcore thing. But she wanted so much more. And there it was her whole life had oriented her to this, to the Carmel from an early age. And once she was there, she was perfectly prepared for it by as little as had come before. And lo and behold, you get a doctor of the church and a great saint. And mm-hmm. it's funny talking about Therese after telling my vocation story. But the saints, Colby, Therese, Faustina, St. Michael, patron saint of paratroopers, all the archangels. I was born, Feast of the Archangels. I'm born in a briar patch. But the it's a reference to Br'er Rabbit.
Oh, my gosh.
But
I understand that. I know that one.
I know that reference.
But it's just funny. Like, I don't know. What? I've over the course of my time knowing you, this is just sort of a plug about our friendship. But
yeah,
like,
go ahead. I'm a big fan of our friendship.
Yeah, me too, as it turns out. What? But, you know, I've benefited very, very much from your experience as well. I mean, there's been a lot that I've been able to look up to you as an older brother in a lot of ways, just because of, you know, your experience, military stuff. I mean, being able to deal with junk that happens during life mm-hmm. in general, is something that you can be very prepared for by going through the military. Going to the military in some capacity. I'm sure, especially living in Afghanistan for that much time and just, I don't know, all the training that you went through and everything. So it's been a wealth of knowledge for me. And just being able to help me get through a bunch of
praise stuff, God. You know, again, if that's how God wants to make the arrangements, praise God. I mean, the Turks, when they went off to the Korean War, so the Korean War was the only war that the UN ever was a part of as an official fighting force. Mm-hmm. And Turkey was a member of the UN. So they sent all these Turks off to fight, and they couldn't speak any other of the NATO languages, which is... There's a bunch of crazy stories. But they come back, these veterans come back to Turkey. And you've got – and they're young men. All these elders of the towns and villages they come back to, they turn to them and they are asking them questions. Mm. Because they have never had Turks travel so far outside the bounds. And they expect them to bring back this wealth of knowledge. And again, the Turks would say, these veterans would say, I didn't know much of anything else.
Right.
You know, like, right. So my experiences are what they are, praise God. But like, of it, when it's all said and done, God gives you what you need, no matter what it is you're doing. Yeah. And it's a question of whether or not you take what's given you and are willing to cooperate with the grace to use it in whatever capacity that is.
Right. Well, that was the gospel. That was the gospel from this morning for the daily lectionary is that it was all about providence. Yeah. Do not take sack or another cloak or sandals or just like, this is all going to be provided for you.
Yes.
Are you ready for it?
Uh-huh. Like, yes.
And are you going to be able to receive it when it comes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, that's you relied a lot on providence in your life over the course of these many years.
Uh-huh.
And it all lines up. And it's amazing how God even uses our calendar to like show us these funny mm-hmm. little things. June 6th.
Yeah.
And just it's all laid out. And it's all there, as Father Dan Shai would say.
Yeah.
It's all there. Anyway. So yeah. It's just amazing. It really is. The Lord really does prepare us well for life if we're open to it and looking for it.
Oh, there it is. And yeah, I'm super pleased to be a priest. I'm super pleased to be in this diocese. I'm very happy. If you do what God is asking you to do, if you feel called to a certain way of life, pursue it and be open to whatever challenges He throws up in the way, but cooperate mm-hmm. and great graces will flow. That's all I know. The Blessed Mother, again, there's this beautiful Pietà sitting on this table between me and Dan. And there she is cooperating in that moment. And all He's asking her to do, all He's asking her to do is hold her dead son. And there's a moment of incredible grace for the sake of all of mankind. Mm-hmm. And your life, brothers and sisters, is very similar to that. Whatever is going on, whether it be good, bad, or just your average day, cooperate and there will be great graces, and it will make you a great saint.
Absolutely.
Hua.
Absolutely. And if hopefully some of the story that you've given us today also helps explain a little bit of our logo with the cannons and the defense of the Jerusalem
and
crosses.
Like the crusade element and all of that other thing. Anyways, it's soon everyone will be me. Anyway.
So it's definitely a little bit of a nod to Father Felicia's background and in canonating things. But and then also just the Jerusalem cross, while it is a Jerusalem cross,
cool.
It also is a symbol for the entire church.
Yes.
The idea of like the four crosses in the corners being the four corners of the earth, all of Christendom.
Every direction.
And so for us, you know, again, sort of reiterating, like our goal as clerics in the church, hopefully both priests someday, will be this defense of Christendom, the defense of the people of Jesus Christ, the people of the Lord, for the sake of the kingdom of heaven.
We don't do this job because for us, if this gets me to heaven, that's incidental. Like I do this so that I can help other people get to heaven.
Right.
That's like my desperate quest in life. And I'm not even kidding you.
Yeah.
Like I exist. Dan exists. The priests and the clerics exist for you, the people of God. And that's just the way it is. Like I have to help. Because that's the role I've been given.
That's the only thing we can do.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I think that about wraps it for this episode.
Yeah,
the Deus Vult podcast.
Hopefully that wasn't, I'm sorry, that was just me talking.
That's great. And that was the entire point of the show today.
Oh, but, praise God.
But you know, hey, you know, Father Felicia, thank you for your yes to the Lord and his call to your life. Well, friends, you know, pray for Father Stephen. His ministry has yet only begun. And
Deacon Dan, thank you for your friendship, first of all, for being just such a stellar human being, for putting this together. Because Lord knows, like I said, I don't have the energy for this. So thank you.
It's truly a pleasure. If I can handle the technical side of it, I will.
You're doing good. You're doing good, boy.
But anyway, on that front, you know, friends, follow us on Facebook, Deus Vult Podcast. Instagram, deus.vult.podcast. You can find us there. We're going to be posting some things, you know, hopefully every few days, every other day or every day about just different saints that are on the calendar.
Super cool.
I'm going to start doing that pretty soon. And then you can also send us an email at deusvultpodcast@gmail.com.
At your service, people.
At your service. All right, my friends, God bless you. And remember,
Deus Vult.